Take me where the promise is.
Are we ready to have a meeting? My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say yes. I am one of them, too. I must have this thing. And this is the second opportunity I've gotten to hear tonight's speaker tell his story, and I'm very excited to hear again about the six things. And we have Bill as our speaker tonight.
Good evening, everyone. It's great to be up here sober tonight. Again, Bill Barnes, alcoholic. My sobriety date is 1/21/93. I'm going to spend just a little bit of time on what it was like, because if you're sitting in this room, you know what it was like because you lived it. I just want to qualify myself, and then I'm going to talk about a lot about what I did, what I was taught to do, and the tools that I've learned here, and later in the story I'll talk about what it's like now, the gifts of recovery. One of those good nuggets I used to hear early on that people would say, you know, if you do the things that are suggested, things get better, then they get better, and they don't stop getting better. And these cool things will come out of left field and right field that we don't expect that really do happen, and that's been my experience all the time I've been here. So it's great to be back at NABA. My original sponsor, who has passed on now, was a great fellow. His name was Lawrence Potts, and the 9:30 morning meeting was his home group. And he was known for his sense of humor, but every single time, and he got known for this too, Every single time he shared, he would always, at some part in his share, he would say, you know, this is serious business. And it is. It's serious business. That doesn't mean that we don't enjoy the ride. Over a period of 20 years, I really respect the singleness of purpose of the meetings. Part of my story is outside stuff, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that because, in my humble opinion, and you can talk to your sponsor if you don't agree with this, is that a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. If I'm putting something in to change the way I feel, it's all the same stuff. So I'm very grateful that the outside issue came in because I believe it took me down quicker than I would have ended up here in the first place. But I'm definitely a Jack Daniels alcoholic. Okay. So again, the outside issues took me down quicker. I could have gone on for a while longer. Who knows how long if that hadn't happened. So over a 20-year period, I was a late bloomer. I know some people in here probably started drinking at 2 years old. I wasn't one of them. I was kind of somehow sheltered until I was 18, but then I started catching up with lost time immediately, and I started drinking beer and drinking liquor and ended up at the University of Georgia, and that's where some of that outside issue came in. And so I was off to the races, and what this disease cost me were 3 marriages. And I look back on the marriages, and there were, each one of them, didn't know this until I look back on them, each one of them was, I'd date a year, I'd be married for 3 years, and then the first two I left because I knew I couldn't continue doing what I wanted to do if I stayed married. And then the third one, so they all three were a year, 3 years married, a year, 3 years married, and a year, 3 years married. Well, the last one, during this time, had some health to her, and I'd gone out that one more time and stayed out. What I did, I binged. I was gone for 2 or 3 days, and what my history had been with that was that I would disappear And I would wait till she left for work the next morning. Then I would come home and try to sleep it off until she got home. And then I'd try to find out how much trouble I'm in. She never said during the last year of our marriage that I'm going to leave you if you do this again. But when I look back on it, she was saying that stuff. I just couldn't hear it. And so that last time out there, I did it one more time. I came home and she'd been to see a counselor. And she said, here's the quote I remember. She said, Bill, I love you. But you have killed the in love that I had for you by your actions. And I understood that. So she left. Here I am, sitting in a condo, divorced for the third time. And as we know, alcoholics and drug addicts don't do well with finances. And I was kind of past broke. But I had some credit cards and I had a little bit of money and some other people's money. So I did what any good alcoholic who thinks his life's over. I got on a grandiose alcoholic. I got on a plane and went to the Bahamas, and then Jamaica, and I drank Jack Daniels, and I shot cocaine for 48 straight days. That should qualify me for being here. What happened is, when I got back, my family had found this place called MAR. It's a world-class treatment center here in Atlanta. And I ended up there, and I'm very, very grateful that I did. Now, we'll talk about treatment centers in a minute. Treatment centers are a wonderful place. I'll back up and say that there are a lot of people that come to these rooms, they have hit a bottom sufficient enough to be willing to go to any length to get sober, and they're willing to take suggestions and be honest with a sponsor and get through the 12 steps where the magic happens. You know, I've been taught this is the fellowship. It's an incredibly important part of my recovery, but it is not the program. The program is right up there on the wall, the 12 steps. So if I'm going to 12-step meetings and not working the 12 steps, I am not in the program, and I'm certainly not going to, in my experience, going to get the solution that I came here looking for. Treatment centers are a great place. If you're not one of those ones that can pick up a white chip and just get it in the rooms and end up in a treatment center, it's a great place to get a kind of a jump start on recovery. And I learned a lot. One of the biggest things I learned from MAR was that when I got there, I thought subconsciously, I never would say this to myself, I thought subconsciously that I was a bad guy, a bad human being. All I had to do was to look at my behavior over the 20 years I was out there to see that I wasn't a good guy, just a bad human being. Well, MAR taught me about the disease concept, which is that I have a disease called alcohol and drug addiction, that when in the throes of my disease, I will do stuff that I would not ordinarily do. And my sponsor helped me with that. I was 2, 3, 4 months sober, and he said, hey, Bill, you're still out there robbing, cheating, stealing, doing the stuff you used to do. And I said, no. He says, well, that shows me you're not a bad guy. It shows me you're a sick guy. So I start taking the shame and the guilt for all the things that I've done and hanging on the hook of the disease. And later down the road, somebody gave me a great tool. They said, Bill, hypothetically, if you'd had diabetes and you'd gotten bad insulin for that 20 years and you'd gone in some diabetic shock thinking through the time and you'd done some stuff that you were not proud of and now you're getting good insulin and you're come to your right mind, would you think you were a bad guy? And the answer for me was no. I was a sick guy. I have a disease. And so for me, what a huge relief to realize, hey, I'm not a bad guy. I'm a sick guy. And again, I look at my behavior since I've gotten sober, and it is nothing like it used to be. Going to a treatment center, I can learn those things. I can do some group. I can find out what they call the core issues, which is what's my issue, what's my problems. And I'm very grateful that MAR required me to go to meetings. And I got very, very lucky. One more thing about being in treatment. One of the great lines that I learned to internalize and to use for my whole being here since being sober is I became willing to hear what I did not want to hear about me. You know, before recovery, if you said, hey, Billy, you might want to look at you don't tell the truth all the time. You might want to look at your don't respect people's time. You show up late to meetings and stuff. Or anything else, I would have made it about you. Why don't you look at your own damn self? Or it takes one to know one. I wasn't capable of looking inside and saying, is that right? And one of the real gifts of recovery is that when I become willing to hear what I don't want to hear, no matter where it comes from, and it is easier to hear it from some places than it is others, but I still need to be willing to hear something pointed out to me that I might need to take a look at. That's the way I get rid of, I call them blind spots, things about myself that I would want to change if I could see them. I just couldn't see them. I didn't know I had them. I'm going to tell a story real quick that part of getting sober is to get out and live life. It is not to stay in the cocoon of AA. I'm very much in AA and participate regularly in it, but the whole point of getting sober is to get out and live life. I have a lot of friends that are not in the programs that are just good human beings, and there have been times, and I'll illustrate one, when I was up in the mountains with a friend, who close friend of mine, and he had never asked me about alcoholism. So he said, we're sitting out under the stars, and he said, hey, will you mind telling me about this alcoholism stuff? And I said, sure, I'll be happy to. And I always say this to whoever asks me when I choose to disclose, because I don't owe disclosure to anybody if I don't want to disclose. In this case, I wanted to. And I always say this to the person that asks me. I say, well, I just want you to know, I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic. And I get the look like, are you crazy? And I go on to explain. I say, yeah, if I wasn't one, I would have been bouncing off of life with my character defects, not knowing I had them, doing the best I could with my life, and I would have just had a miserable life. But because I found these rooms, and I found a good sponsor, and I found the 12 steps, and then practiced what I've learned there, I've had a life and have a life that is way beyond anything I dreamed for it to be. The four things that I did not know existed before I got here were healthy self-esteem, healthy self-respect, peace, and serenity. Didn't know what those were. And those are some of the real gifts of recovery. So in the treatment center, they required us to go to meetings. And I ended up going to this second week I was there. This guy took me to this great meeting I went to called the Log Cabin. And the book talks about attraction rather than promotion. And I was attracted to the people that I saw. I walked up to my first few meetings, and there were people standing out on the front step, and they were laughing and telling stories. And as I got to know them a little bit, they had lives. They had jobs. They were had friends. They had a good life. And I was attracted to that. So I started listening to what they were saying. And what they were talking about is the 12 steps. And they were talking about this higher power thing. So let me address that right now. I didn't come here to find a higher power, which I choose to call God. I did not come here to find God. What I came here was to find how to quit using alcohol and drugs. But they kept talking about the importance of finding something bigger than I was. And I had that stumbling block of how do I get over that? Because I wanted what they had. And so I became willing to do what they do. So when somebody said to me this nugget, they said, hey, Bill, a group of people with a common purpose to stay clean is a greater power than me trying to do it by myself. There's the illustration that I could buy that there's a higher power, something bigger than me, that will help me if I will just ask. What I did, and the book talks about this, I used the group as my higher power. And the way I used it, I picked two or three guys that I respected in the group, because we learned to depend on a higher power. Depending on my own thinking, I'm screwed. But I get help from you folks, a sponsor, and a higher power. The way I learned to depend on a higher power is I used those three guys, and I keep my higher power, again, which I choose now to call God, right here, where I can just lean over and talk to him. But I put those three guys up here. And so what I learned to do, and there's a magic word in recovery, it's called pause. Pause when I'm disturbed. The spiritual axiom is whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. It doesn't say when I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with whatever I'm disturbed at. It's how I'm receiving it. Usually for me, it's impatience and intolerance. Those are my two biggies. So if I was patient and tolerant with whatever I'm disturbed with, would I be upset? And the answer is no. So I learned to, when I was disturbed or getting ready to do something or say something, I would look up. And after a while, I didn't have to get further than here instead of over here. Or what would they suggest I say and do? That way I started learning to check how I was going to do things. And by bringing, the more I brought that in to what I was doing, the better my life went. We get here, we create terrible consequences when we're out there. And when we get here and we start practicing the stuff that I'm going to talk about and I am talking about, things get better, then they get better, and they don't stop getting better. I'm creating, instead of bad consequences, I'm creating good consequences because based on my thinking, my behavior, and my words. So I was sitting in that halfway house, and my sponsor said to me, probably 2-3 months in, the sponsor said to me two things. One, I did not like at all, and the other one I liked a lot. And the first thing he said to me I did not like was, hey, Bill, you're right where you're supposed to be right now. I didn't want to be sitting in a halfway house, divorced the third time, past broke. I wasn't broke. I was past broke. But he was exactly right. I was right where I was supposed to be that moment to learn what I was going to learn that day to take it to the next day. And then the second thing he said that I really did like, do like, is there's nowhere to get to. I'm never going to arrive. I used to think before recovery, if I had the house, the girl, the car, the whatever, I would be there, wherever there is. And I've come to learn that stuff are nice, but that's not what I'm after. I'm after peace, serenity, healthy self-esteem, and healthy self-respect. A lot of that stuff has come to me by doing practicing the principle of the program in my life, but there's nowhere for me to get to. It's how do I get a little better at this every day? There's a men's workshop called the Atlanta Men's Workshop, and I cannot strongly recommend enough that you come in March. It's March 21st, 22nd, 23rd. It's atlantamensworkshop.com. It's 400 guys down near Lake Oconee, and it's world-class speakers, workshops, great barbecue. It's a great weekend to take a break from life, go spend 2.5 days rubbing recovery all over me, and come home. My wife loves that I go. I come home a little more spiritual, a little more kind, a little more sober. One of the reason I'm explaining that is because one of the speakers there, I call these things nuggets, these pieces of information that I can use to change my perspective. And those that know me know I always like to say that all recovery is a change in perspective. Think about that for a minute. I look at alcohol and drugs different than I did when I got here. I look at relationships different. I look at money different. I look at everything from a different, totally different perspective. So there was a speaker, his name was Ricky, and y'all been in some meetings, you may have heard the saying that says, my disease is out in the parking lot doing push-ups. Well, Ricky said his disease is not out in the parking lot doing push-ups, it's in his head, and it's another person, and his name is Earl. And I've stolen that name. I like the name Earl. Earl, he said, doesn't have any hands, any feet, any arms, any legs, but he wants to drink, and he wants me to act out, and he wants to kill me, basically. And so he's up here alive. My disease, named Earl, is up here alive and well in my head. And so today, he's still there, and he's always going to be there. And I've learned to pause, and I remember laying in the bed about 3 weeks ago, laying there, and I had this crazy thoughts, and I paused, and I said, am I listening to Earl, or am I listening to the Healthy Bill? And I immediately recognized that was Earl. And here's the fun saying, shut the hell up, Earl. And I told him that, but then it was my part of the deal to change my thinking back to something positive. And I use this a lot, because when I have a using thought, when I have any other kind of negative thought, that's Earl. That's my disease trying to kill me, trying to get me to drink, trying to get me to act out, trying to get me to live in character defects. So I call that one a golden nugget, because it's such a profound way to help me change my perspective. So pick your own name. You can steal Earl too if you want to. I like that one. So when I got here, y'all taught me about doing the basics of recovery. And I'll tell you what my basics are in a minute, but in the last 6 months, I've heard two different discussion leaders in two different meetings talk about their topic was the importance of doing the basics of recovery every day. And both of them, independently of each other, said that they weren't perfect at it. And I chose to share at the end of each meeting and talk about the importance of the basics. But then I went on to share, I've looked back as far as I can remember and how many days I have missed doing the basics. And the answer, honestly, is zero. The reason is, one is, it's not hard to do this stuff. And two, there's this huge payoff in growing my sobriety. The book talks about there is no standing still in recovery. Either I'm moving forward, getting more sober, or I'm moving backwards. So the basics for me, and you can choose your own, basics for me are, I read these things called the ponderables. They're an email I get every morning. It's free. Happy to tell you, forward it to you after the meeting if you want it. It's a compilation of recovery readings that's really good. Before I get out of bed, I prop myself up on the bed. I read the ponderables. I then roll on my knees and I say the third step prayer till I hear it. It's just an awesome prayer. Relieve me of the bondage of me today, that I may better do your will, that I may better live in character qualities today. Excuse me. Take away my difficulties. What a cool thing. I want my difficulties taken away, but not for me, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of the power of the love and the way of life. May I do your will always. May I live in character qualities always. People always talk about, what's God's will for me? I didn't want anything to do with a higher power before I got here because I intrinsically, subconsciously knew that I couldn't do the things that I thought I wanted to do. So for me, I keep it simple. I try to keep all of this simple. God's will for me today is simply to live in character qualities, patience, tolerance, interest in others, honesty, all the ones I learned about through doing a good fourth and fifth and a sixth and seventh. To live in character qualities towards everything, including myself, especially in early recovery. I need to be easy on myself in early recovery, but hold myself accountable to do this stuff. And then living in character qualities in every other interaction that I have throughout the day. If I do that, how can I not be living in God's will? Pretty simple, right? I read the ponderables. I say the third set prayer. I talk to at least three people in recovery every day. I make my meetings. I do a 10-step every night. An honest 10th step, and I say the third step prayer on my knees before I go to bed. If you think about it, how hard is it to do that stuff? Not hard at all. So the only reason I wouldn't do that stuff is because I'm listening to who? Earl doesn't want me to do the basics every day. He wants me out there. He wants me to relapse. He wants me to die, really. You might consider figuring out what your basics are going to be and then start practicing because it will serve you. It serves me well. I'll put it that way. It served me for almost 32 years now. And I'm not going to miss a day. The other thing I forgot to say I do every morning is I make my bed. I learned to do that in treatment, and it's just part of what I do. So those are the basics. The big book talks about, I believe, that a simple stuff for complicated people, you know, and I will complicate anything. So I've learned to, again, try to keep this stuff simple, to break down the recipe for getting sober and the recipe for staying sober. I've broken it down into, I call it the six things, simple six things. They are, and I'll run through them and I'll break them down. They are, go to meetings, get a competent sponsor, work all 12 steps, learn to pray, work with others, and learn how to have fun sober. That's it. So the first one's go to meetings. You know, if I don't go to meetings, I can't hear those nuggets. I can't hear those changes in perspectives that I get every time I go to a meeting, if I really listen to everything that's shared. And that's where I'm going to find that competent sponsor. And a sponsor should be somebody maybe I don't even want to ask because I know I can't run a game on them, and they're going to hold me accountable to do the work. And that is who I should ask. We learn to work all 12 steps. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people come in, they're beat up, they've hit a bottom, they get a spoon, they get through the first three steps, and then a little bit of time's gone by, and they've got a job, and they've got maybe a buck or two in their pocket, and their family's talking to them again, and they go, I don't need to do the rest of this stuff. They are shorting themselves, and they don't usually stick around, maybe for a while, but usually go back out. So it's working all 12 steps, and it doesn't take that long to work all 12 steps if I give it the attention that it deserves. And here's the suggestion. Instead of my sponsor having to drag me through the steps, how about I become willing to just do the work he's suggesting and call him up and say, hey, I've done that. What's next? And I will get through this in a fairly quick manner, quickly but thoroughly. We don't skip anything that way. But it doesn't take 6 months. It doesn't take a year to get through the steps. It can be done quickly but thoroughly. We learn to pray. And I talked about the higher power thing. And it's simply asking for some help for something bigger than me. And the higher power thing, the big book talks about having less contempt prior to more investigation. So when I became open to the idea that there might be something bigger than me in the universe, there it was the whole time. And I just started having that faith. Let me say, if anybody ever comes up to you and says, let me explain God to you, you ought to run as fast as you can away. That's an unknowable thing. I've learned to pray and ask for guidance and ask for help. I prayed for the right words tonight before I came up here on stage, so to help. I learned to pray. We work with others. One of the biggest gifts I've ever had is the chance to work with some guys, work with a bunch of guys. And when I'm sitting down talking about 6 and 7, which is character defects, character qualities, and listening to them first and explaining what my understanding of it is, what do you think it does for me? It helps me reinforce me looking at my own. It helps me understand them more and my willingness to practice them. So what I say is, whatever understanding I have of the 12 steps came from working with my original sponsor, but vastly more so working them over and over again with guys. And I'm eternally grateful for them. They helped me a ton. So work with others. And then we don't have, it doesn't just have to be sponsoring somebody, you know. I like the term going to 3 meetings a day. And don't get scared, I'm not trying to tell you to go to 3 separate meetings. It is the 25 minutes before the meeting is a meeting. The meeting itself is a meeting, and the 25 minutes after the meeting is a meeting. And that's where I can carry the message and be of help and be of service to somebody brand new and develop those relationships. If I was just to show up on time for the meeting and leave when it's over, I am shorting myself big time. And I'm likely not to stay sober. And I'm certainly not getting the fellowship that I can get from going to those 3 meetings a day. And then learning how to have fun sober. About my experiences, non-scientific, about 50% of people that come into recovery have no trouble learning how to have fun sober. About 50% have real trouble. What I always explain about is, if I called up one of my friends and I said, where's a really good speaker meeting on Monday night? And they say, well, there's this great blue chip speaker meeting at NABA on Monday night. I say, how do you get there? Because I'm willing, and there's that word again, willing to walk through the feelings of life to get sober. I find my way there, but even on the way to the meeting, I would be thinking, how do I get there? Is it going to be a good meeting? Are the people going to be friendly? Am I going to get a good message? But I'm willing, so I walk through all those feelings and I show up at the blue chip speaker meeting. And sure enough, sometimes there's a good speaker. Okay, and so I like the meeting, so I come back the next week. And even then, I'm still going to have some of those feelings. I don't know people yet. I'm not big friends. The third, fourth month. Once I've been 20 times, guess what? I'm just looking forward to going to the meeting. And it's the same thing with having fun. If I don't know how to have fun, ask some guys what they do for fun and be willing to walk through all those feelings and go have and learn how to get a hobby, go do something fun. Because I'm here, my experience is if I don't have some fun sober, I'm not going to stay sober. Because the book talks about we absolutely insist on enjoying life. So go have some fun. I'm going to talk about kindness. It's a great word. It's a great nugget. Didn't know anything about it before I got here. The definition I like of kindness is that in any situation, any interaction with somebody, I care more about how they feel at that moment in my words and my actions than how I feel. And I practice this in everything that I do. I go into the Walgreens regularly, and there's some people that work behind the counter, and when I get my whatever I'm buying, I'll always say to them, thank you for your friendly and professional help. And I mean it, and I get a smile from them, and it made their day a little better. Made my day, making their day a little better. And in close relationships, so those are sometimes the hardest place to practice kindness, because we're set in our old ways. But kindness, if I think about it, what am I going to say, what am I going to do? Do I have their feelings in mind more importantly than I do mine? It's just an incredible way to live. And it creates healthy self-esteem, healthy self-respect. Relationships tend to grow stronger when I treat it that way, as opposed to being impatient, intolerant, and not caring about with what I'm saying to somebody, how they feel. Good nugget there. I hope you'll start practicing kindness in everything that I do. Character defects, character qualities, brain cancer. My sponsor taught me this too a long time ago. He said, hey Bill, when somebody is acting crazy or saying stuff that's not kind, if you knew, hypothetically, if you knew that they had a big brain tumor in their head, how would you respond to them? And I said, well, I wouldn't let it bother me, because they can't help it because they're sick. And he went on to explain that people living in their character defects is exactly the same thing as having brain cancer. They can't see it. It's blind spots on their part. They can't help it. I really started practicing that and practice today. I've never, when somebody's saying something that's not kind or not good, I've never looked at somebody and gone, hey man, you got brain cancer. But inside my head, I've gone, brain cancer. And what that lets me do is not go to a bad place because of somebody else's character defects. It's a hugely great tool to practice going through life. I want peace and serenity. Am I going to let somebody's bad behavior rent space in my head with the resentment because they're acting badly when they can't help it? They got brain cancer. So food for thought there. Projection, one of the most, I call it the second most useful tool I've learned in recovery behind prayer. I'll tell you how I learned it. I was still in Mar, got permission to go back in my career, which was a commission sales position. Gift of God, the company, the guys, the loose partnership that I had, let me come back and gave me a desk. And so the second day at work, I worked for 2 days trying to, and I remember, I'm not broke, I'm past broke. I owe $60,000 that I cannot bankrupt. I went through bankruptcy during this period, but there was 60 grand for friends and family I could not bankrupt. Didn't want to bankrupt. I wanted to pay them back. So second day back at work, I've done everything I can that day. I'm leaning back, looking out the window, and feeling the weight of all that money. How in the world am I ever going to pay this back? And it was making me miserable. So you know what I did? If you don't know what I did, you know what I should have done? Call my sponsor. Why would I want to try to figure this out myself when I got somebody who helped me, give me some perspective? I called them. So I called my sponsor, and I said, hey, man, I'm miserable. And he said, what are you miserable about? I want to explain to him, I owe this money out, and I'm going to pay it back. He went on to explain the difference between planning and projecting. Planning is a good thing. Projecting is not. Projecting is a useless, harmful mental exercise. It has no possibility of making things better and every possibility of making things worse. It will also paralyze me from doing what I should be doing. He said, in this case, the planning was, he said, hey, Bill, pull out a piece of paper, write down who you owe money to and how much money you owe, and then prioritize it so that when you make a commission, you can start chipping away at this thing. So I did that. And he said, now, Bill, any thought of this money between now and the time you could make a commission, does it have any possibility of making things better? And the answer was no. He said, does it have every possibility of making things worse? And the answer was yes. Makes me miserable for no reason. So, sure enough, I started practicing that. And he also said, Bill, this is the only thing he ever suggested I overdo. He said, start looking at your thinking. You know, human beings are the only animal that can look at, what am I thinking? Am I thinking the right stuff? He said, start looking for your thinking and ask yourself, is this projection? And he said, overdo this. And so I started looking at it minute by minute, hour by hour. And what I found was that 90-something percent of my thinking was out in the future, or in the past, worried about something I could do nothing about at this moment. It is a useless, right where Earl wants me. Earl wants me to make me restless, irritable, and discontent. And that's a great way to do it. So it's a great tool if you choose to use it. What it's like now. I told you about the three marriages that I burned down. I was full of character defects. Well, I got in here and I started practicing what y'all taught me, and I've got 2 years sober, and I always heard people talk about making myself ready for a healthy relationship. There's a term that says sickness attracts sickness, health attracts health. And so I'd done sufficient work on myself to where I made myself somewhat attractive in personality to have a healthy relationship. Then I met my wife, Gigi, over here. And we've been happily married for 28 years. And I'll tell you a funny story. So when it was time to ask Gigi, ask her to marry me, I went to talk to her Greek father and her mother, and I said this. I said, George and Helen, I love your daughter. I'd like for you to ask your hand in marriage, but you need to know I'm a recovering alcoholic and I'm broke. And I said, but I love your daughter, and I will take good care of her going forward. And so they were a little stunned, but I walked through that. I was honest with them. I didn't lie about anything. And we ended up getting married, and I became, over time, by practicing these principles, the favorite son-in-law. When Gigi would go visit her parents, and if I wasn't with her, her dad would say, where's Bill? Which, how cool is that? So, gift of recovery, a healthy, wonderful, incredible human being that I've been blessed to be married to for all this time. I then started practicing these principles in that business that I told you, leaning back and trying to get it going again. And I took suggestions from my sponsor, and I kept working at it. And I got better at it and more successful all the way up through to 8 years ago when I was able to very, very, very comfortably retire from my career. That could not have happened if I had not been sober. I was afraid when I was before recovery I would not get the good life. And I'm here to tell you, I've got it in spades today. I like myself. I respect myself. I have a lot of peace and serenity. It's just a huge gift of recovery. Whenever something good happens to you, I hope you'll remember this, is that it's a gift of recovery. Because if I wasn't doing the things of recovery, would it have happened? And the answer for me, and everything that's happened to me since I got sober, the answer is no. So if you're new here, I'll challenge you. If you haven't got a sponsor, get a really good one. Go work all 12 steps. This is the fellowship. That's the program. If I don't work the steps, I'm not going to get this thing, this magic thing that gives us that change in perspective. This is where the change in perspective happens. I get some of it from talking to you folks about my problems or whatever. And just do the basics. Do the deal. And if you do, then you can have a life way beyond your wildest dreams. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. I think there were some good nuggets in there. And clearly there's a couple men here who get a lot out of calling their sponsors. So thank you for speaking. Steve is going to do the chip.
My name is Steve, and I'm an alcoholic. Here at AA, we use the chip system. And we start with that white chip. Take that step to remain sober for 24 hours. Anybody here? 24 hours.
First I slipped, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Take me where the promises are.